The Bible has its own way of saying certain things. Modern science has other ways of saying things, but we're kind of talking about the same reality. Modern science would talk about the 14 billion years of evolution, of progress, of creation. That's been a very gradual process that, and in the evolutionary movement, there's a rising in consciousness. So when you get to humans, you have this consciousness that is more in the image of God, who is consciousness itself, than all the lower creatures. And it's to that part of evolution that Christ comes in the flesh, to point out that consciousness and its destiny and its purpose, and to point it toward its end, which is back to God. So Paul has this wonderful vision of everything emanating out from God, out into the space, into this seemingly infinite reality, but like a boomerang, returning to its source, so that this original unity in the Trinity goes out into huge diversity, but it all belongs to God all the time. And God is aware of it and conscious of it and attending to everything in existence all the time. But as consciousness grows, we become aware of God, and we become aware of our origins, and we also become aware of our destiny to end up in this unity. St. Paul calls it this way, everything must be assumed under the headship of Christ until everything belongs to him, and then he will hand it over to the Father so that God may be all in all. In other words, that's that final unity as Paul envisions it. So in this morning's readings, we have this talk about death and resurrection. And in the Book of Wisdom, the author says, God did not intend death. God created humans in his own image, and he created them imperishable. In other words, that they would not die. But death entered into the world through sin, he says. Well, that is in line with what Genesis describes in creation, that in the garden there was harmony and life, nothing but life. There was nothing about death until humans sinned, and then loss, strife, struggle, death, tragedy, all these kinds of things enter into the world and into the human experience because of sin. Well, maybe that's a simplistic way of saying it. Modern science would say there's this kind of frustration in evolutionary process because things are destined to be something, but it takes forever, seemingly, for that to happen. And so in theological terms, we call that the already but the not yet of the kingdom. Christ has ushered the kingdom in, and the kingdom is available to us now in so many ways, and yet it awaits its final resolution because not everything has come under the headship of Christ. But we can. This is what free will is about. We can come under the headship of Christ. We know that it's available to us now. And so the scriptures, particularly the New Testament, are filled with this language of resurrection, of this language of new creation. And last week we had these readings about Christ being the author of life. He commands the wind and the sea, and it obeys him. This Jesus is the Son who is the word spoken by the Father, and creation begins to happen. And now, in human flesh, he commands the sea, and it calms down. And he commands his disciples, calm down, and they do. And so what we're hearing this morning is a kind of a continuation of that idea, but it's more aggressive in terms of its commanding about death. You know, a lot of the language in the Gospels about Jesus is confrontational. He rebukes the wind. He confronts it and commands it. He doesn't say, oh, now, be nice. You know, he rebukes the wind. And here, he rebukes death. He confronts it. And so we have this wonderful gospel story with a miracle within a miracle story. And so it starts out with the little girl, and her father comes and begs Jesus to come and lay his hands on her because she's near death. And of course, by the time they get there, she's already dead. And then in the middle of that story, there's another story about the woman suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. And the connection between the two, in a way, is the number 12. The girl is 12 years old. The woman has been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. It's almost like when the girl was born, the older woman's problems started. Okay, let's take the old woman first. She's dying. She's been dying for 12 years. And it's a long process. And, you know, those who have had cancer or had family with cancer, you know what long illness is. And it's debilitating, and it takes its time, and it's hard to endure. And this woman she's suffered greatly for a long time. But in New Testament language, in that culture in those days, if you had an illness that could not be cured by doctors, then it was certain that this was caused by sin. So she must be a sinner, otherwise doctors could cure her. And since she's a sinner, she's ritually impure, and she cannot enter a synagogue, and she certainly can't go into the temple. So she's cut off from the faith community. She's considered impure. So not only is she suffering physically, but she's suffering the loss of community. She's an untouchable. She's alienated from her family, from the faith community, which was so important in that culture. And when Jesus dries up her flow of blood, which she feels immediately, she gets restored to health, but she also gets restored to the community because now she can go through ritual ablutions and she can re-enter the temple, re-enter the synagogue. She's restored to the community. So resurrection in her happens in a holistic kind of way. And like in so many of the stories about Jesus healing people and raising from the dead and stuff, there's this kind of language of exchange because Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem to die. So he's exchanging her death for his own. He's bringing her to life and restoring her to the community. And one of the ways he's doing that is not just in this little story, but he's doing that because he's going to become ritually impure. He's going to become considered an outcast, a sinner. He dies the death of a common criminal on the cross, naked, beriled. You know, he takes the place of the worst human condition so that we can take his place in sharing in divine life. And St. Paul mentions that in that second reading. Yes, Paul is talking about a collection for the poor, but he uses as the example of how God in Jesus took on our humanity, took on our sin and our death so that we might take on his divinity in this wonderful exchange. And then there's the story of the little girl. And by the time Jesus gets to the house, she's already dead. But he raises her from death and he says, "Talitha koum," which means, "Little girl, arise." And the word there, the Hebrew word, is the same word that is used for Jesus' own resurrection. So this is a resurrection story. And then he tells her parents, "Give her something to eat." Interesting little end to the story. Give her something to eat. Why? Because dead people don't eat. You know, this is a true resurrection. She's going to eat again. And it reminds us of another story. On Easter Sunday morning, Jesus enters the upper room where the disciples are gathered, and they think he's a ghost. And so he says, "Do you have anything to eat?" And they give him some fish, and he eats it in front of them, because dead people don't eat, and ghosts don't eat. In other words, this is a true resurrection. Well, we hear these stories over and over again, to remind us that we are living the resurrected life, that our baptism meant something, that our dying to that evolutionary process of all the, you know, all the dying, that everything is dying and rising all the time, and there was a kind of a hopelessness in the past, and I've put my back to that hopelessness because I'm putting my face to hope in the resurrected life, and that has actually worked a change in me, and I'm not the same as I was on the other side of the font. And I'm eating of the heavenly banquet. You know, have you anything to eat? Yeah. I have the meal of the kingdom, and we're going to eat it and drink it in a few minutes. This is the most important meal there is. This is the meal of eternity. This is the nourishment that restores us to the life that God originally intended, imperishable, but lasts forever.